honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
So we missed this on Monday, lads. Desi Farrell was talking about, remember me, Connor's here as well. Do you remember me speculating that the game in Omagh hardly went ahead because the TV made them go ahead? Well, Desi Farrell thinks that was the case, because he said that a GAA official said to me that only for the TV being there, the game would not go ahead. So straight away I read that and went, damn, I wish I had that for the show now and not have to speculate about it. But the GAA have denied that. Fergal McGill told the Irish Sun, said the decision to play the game had nothing to do with TV. In no way would it be a case where TV dictates whether a game goes ahead or not.
Yeah.
Not a weird situation where Desi Farrell, I'm not going to disbelieve Desi Farrell, who was told something. But what's a GAA official? Do you know what I mean? What does that mean?
Is that somebody standing behind his jacket just in Tyrone and all TV making us go ahead? Or, like, I don't know. It reminded me of Mickey Hart saying Sky made them put the lines in.
Just think of that for a second, yeah.
Yeah, so I actually got in touch with RT this morning. I was like, what's the story? Why are you making them play the game? And he just said RT had no input whatsoever into any decision. That
it was Ayr's fault.
Yeah.
It was Ayr as well. But maybe there was an extra pressure from the referee to make it. Look, the referee should be completely independent of what happens on. Remember I joked that the referee would get this phone call from Croke Park, the game goes ahead, and then he just puts down the phone, because he was going out throwing balls on the ground or just sticking in the water. So everyone just thought it was a bizarre, and this is even more bizarre that Desi Farrell would say that and the GAA completely deny it. You just don't know what to believe here.
Yeah, but did they lose the RTÉ or Ayr lose the rights to show the game entirely? Like, I know Mayo Kerry was meant to be on Saturday as well, and because that was moved to Sunday, that wasn't live, because TG Carr would have had their games on Sunday as well, and there would have been a conflict of interest.
Yeah, neither Ayr nor RT would have had any game that weekend. There had to be a pressure there, lads.
I think so.
I would believe there was a pressure there. We don't know how that pressure was applied or how it happened, but anyways, Brian Howard's been talking during the week, lads, and this is funny. So Brian Howard, number one, it's a bit of a weird one that Brian Howard did some media. I'm raging I missed it, because I like to talk to Brian, and now our ban is lifted that can just talk to them. I didn't see that email and I'm a bit annoyed about that, but anyways, I'm surprised Brian Howard was doing media on the Tuesday after Big Brawl, number one, because I reckon Jim Gavin might have told him, here buddy, you're not doing that this week, you're not going to answer questions anyways. But he did it, and sure, he just, you know, he played the game like any player is going to play the game. And he says, I was actually off the pitch, so I was in the dressing room at the time. He says, I heard a bit of commotion, but I was genuinely in the dressing room. Like, there's pictures of him like watching the fight, right? So that's funny. I think that's funny. This is like Arsene Wenger. I didn't see the incident. I'm not going to stop even trying to do any impression. But like, I mean, that's it. What's he going to say? He's not going to say, well, I witnessed it all, but I can't tell you. You know what I mean? So he's just completely brushing off that question, which is fair enough. Then another one I thought was even funnier. He says, when they came in at half time, we had another half to go out and try to win the game, so we weren't talking about it. Then after the game, there was no chat about it. It was just what we did wrong and what we want to put right in 2 weeks. Now, that's absolutely hilarious. Are you telling me a panel of 30 people can leave a game? Now, I'll admit, maybe half time, right? There is another half of football, so there's no talk about it at half time. If you're telling me they didn't do a blow by blow analysis of that row on the bus on the way home, that was the one I thought was the most outrageous to think. But again, what's he going to do? Give people a list of names? Are people really annoyed that a player wouldn't throw his teammates under the bus that were having a bit of a schmozzle in a tunnel?
Would have been great if he said, yeah, I was there. Our lads gave as good as they got.
Yeah. And started listing a few names. Now, well, he's a little bit upset about it. He could face a 6 month ban.
Should see the head on Scully there. He got a right on the job.
Hamsey got a good few slaps now off X.
No, I think the GAA need to come in and hammer both of us now and deal with this correctly.
Madness. So that's it. Brian Howard did the right thing. He's just playing the game for his teammates, and that's it. It was actually confirmed since Monday that Pádraig Hamsey was shown the black card for allegedly verbally abusing an opponent as the teams left the field. So that maybe is how it all kicked off. Like, I mean, if Hamsey said something, we're wondering how this kicked off because the game was played in such good spirits. He got the black card, and apparently the black card was for verbal abuse. Obviously some Dublin player took exception to this and went at it down the tunnel. If he'd known Hamsey was a boxer, he might not might not I'd heard that Hamsey was, is a Hamsey Irish boxed at a very, very high level anyway. Have you heard that? You're looking at me a bit weird, yeah, Colin, but he has anyway. He's not to be messed with. There's a few of the Dublin that's not to be messed with as well, to be fair.
I'm just thinking there's a lot of black cards that haven't been handed out over the last few years.
I'd forgotten that it was a verbal abuse was an offence.
Yeah, it's very rarely implemented, the verbal abuse one. So me go back down, lads, and I thought it was an interesting stat that before this year, five of the last eight teams that have been promoted to the top flight have gone straight back down. And the other three just stayed up the first year and then went down the second year. So, like, I mean, it's very obvious to me that there's a top six in the country. Isn't that fair enough? That there's a top six and there's actually a decent gap to the Kildare and the Roscommons and the Cavans and the ones trying, and the Meads, and the ones trying to get into that top six. And we know who the top six are. They're the top six in the league at the moment, right? Well, no, Mayo are in it. Who's jumped into Mayo's position? But you get my point.
Donegal, I think, have been kind of up and down the last couple of years as well.
Maybe there's a top seven then. No, there's a top seven. Yeah, there's a top seven. And yeah, that then there's a one. Meade Raw was guaranteed to go down, and the question is who was going to go down.
There's a top two, and then there's four after that, and then there's one that's threatening to get into the second top four, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
But Donegal are probably the only good team that have gone up and down, probably in that list of figures that you.
But
gave
I'd
there.
Have Donegal well up. I'd have Same Donegal as. Well oh, course, up yeah. there. I wouldn't have them in any team. You're looking at Kerry, Dublin, obviously.
Yeah.
Then you're looking at Galway, Tyrone, Donegal.
And then give us Mayo as well.
Mayo. Then I'm looking at Monaghan slightly off that, but because let's be honest, Monaghan are having a great league. They always have a great league because they're honest and they hit that league hard. I'd still wait to see what Monaghan do this summer. You know what I mean? I still see Monaghan above Kildare, Meade, and Cavan and these teams, but a little bit below Donegal, Tyrone, Mayo, and Galway.
Let's not revisit that.
You left Galway until last. I can't believe it.
Yeah. But Galway are knocking on the door of the top two. Listen, anyways, this is a pointless kind of conversation. This is almost like power rankings you're talking about.
Donegal got relegated 2 years ago, and then they won Ulster, and then they were in Division 2 last year and won Ulster. So sometimes, we talk about it every year. The league isn't always a great metric. But from me's point of view, they were obviously in the Super 8s last year. So you're thinking, right, are they going to push you on there? They're in Division 1. They got hammered all the games in Super 8s, and now they've lost five matches in a row. So that's eight games in a row that they've lost, really. But the last three, they've been one score game. So maybe they're getting a bit better, but it's too late.
Donald Cogan said that to you, didn't he? Like last week, that while I think you mentioned about momentum, when you're constantly losing games, it's hard to arrest that to get back to winning. But I think he said it, he's obviously going to say it, but I think these teams are genuinely going to benefit from playing against the top teams all the time and then lose and learning as you go, as opposed to them being in Division 2, maybe getting promoted and just not playing at the same level that they're playing Division 1 at the Super 8s. And then they're relegated now, but if you look at Meath in the Championship, then I think they have to beat, if they beat Kildare in a semi-final, they're probably going to get their through to a Leinster final with Dublin. Good chance to get into the Super 8s again. So might look great for them that they're going down, but I'd say they're on an upper curve. And if you look at it, if Andy McEntee is looking at it from an overall point of view, I think he'd be happy enough for where they're going, at least.
Yeah, he doesn't act it. I would agree with you. And I think that when Westmeath go back playing, or when Meath go back playing Division 2 teams now, they will find it a lot easier than they did because they've played at the top level. That's obvious. But Andy McEntee's never happy. He's always giving out. And Malachy Clerkin had a brilliant tweet, I thought, last Sunday. I should have read it out. I didn't have time to talk about Meath. And he says, if Andy McEntee isn't giving out to the ref as he walks off, can it truly be said to be half-time? he's constantly attacking referees. It's all their fault. Every game. And sometimes you feel sorry for managers doing media when they're on a run of losing. Because what do you keep, what do you always have to say? And can you keep making excuses? But I don't think he's in Division 1. No one's expecting him to do anything. And they're actually performing relatively well. They should have beaten Mayo. They performed great against Galway at home. Do you know, this is not an embarrassing, they've no points, but it's not an embarrassing run in Division 1 by any means, considering the injuries they've had. Like Mickey Newman, their best forward, like their goalkeeper is out and they're down to their third choice goalkeeper. You know, young Conlon only came back the last day. Shane Walsh up front was out. You know, the Haran, the centre back was out. Yeah, Haran. Like, I mean, you're talking about Lavin, the cornerback, guaranteed starter. I think he could have got nominated for an All-Star. These are some serious mix of players that these can't afford to be without. So they've done well, but he's just constantly whinging about referees and giving out and getting stressed out. Relax, Andy. Yeah. Relax. You've done well. I wouldn't be too worried. Get everybody back, and well, them and Kildare is going to be a great game.
Yeah, and it's almost wears thin a little bit because all the headlines are always Andy McEntee blasts referee.
Yeah, and on the line he's losing his marbles.
Yeah,
yeah, and like there's a lot of decisions.
They were great against Kerry as well away.
They lost by three away to Kerry. Like yeah, lost by one before that to Mayo. Should have beaten them, Galway. Yeah. Like you know, so they're going all right. And like sometimes a decision does screw you over. But I read his quotes from the last game, and it was talking about for kickouts they were being held and. You know, men were being pushed off the ball. It's like that's why some, referees.
It's a big bad world out there.
And I saw Paddy Joyce saying like that was the same for both teams. Like you know, that's how he was refereeing it. It wasn't a penalty decision that he missed.
Yeah, I think because Galway, Meath were playing brilliantly, and then Galway got back into it just before halftime. And Andy thought it was true cynical means or true, you know, refereeing decisions and whatever. And he's losing his head about this. And listen, like I don't think he needs to go down that road. Like genuinely, anyone looking at Meath, they haven't been wiped out. You know, they've performed admirably, and if anything, with half a team, they've you know. Done better than expectations because I thought they could have seen, you know, with half a team Meath in Division 1, you would think they're in big, big trouble, you know. Yeah. And it's only the Donegal game really was an embarrassing performance. And I like that Donal Keoghan admitted that giving in a good ball and recycling it back out is something they're actively working on because it's an obvious thing in the Donegal game, which was awful. And then you have to think again, they're nowhere near their first choice forward line. Do you know what I mean? Some of their first choice forwards might go at it in that. So maybe, you're being hard. We're being hard on a team that's not at that level with half a bloody team.
Yeah, yeah. But the more Andy McEntee like gives out about the ref all the time, the more headlines that's going to command, as you say. So the less kind of, there's going to be not as much encouraging chat about Meath. Whereas, you know, as you said, it hasn't been that bad of a campaign at all. And when the complaints that Andy McEntee might have are justified, as they were with the Mayo game, when he should, like, injury time was blown up bang on 4 minutes when there should have been more, you have less sympathy because, sure, you're giving out about the referee again, like, you know. So I don't know, like, it's as you said, it's hard when somebody is interviewed immediately after the game. But I don't know, maybe something Andy McEntee might learn from going forward to, you know, because the focus will be more on the positive things they're doing then if he's not always kind of giving out about that.
Yeah, no, exactly. So the back pass rule has had a mixed reaction. Desi Farrell thinks it's a good rule change. He said, I actually think it's a good rule change. It's squeezing the thing up because you can see there, you can see out there in situations where teams want to run down the clock, they've got their advantage and the use of the goalkeeper becomes quite apparent in that way. It just makes it more interesting. And that's a point of it we didn't really talk about. We talked a lot about from the kickouts, but it is for winding down the clock as well. If you want to pass it over and back, you do have that option. But then again, that's not going to stop that. It's just from a kick out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just from a kick out, they could kick it out, give it back, then play a bit of keep ball. Again, it is a high risk strategy, especially we saw Kerry couldn't do it against Dublin in the All-Ireland final. But it is another thing he's talking about. Pádraig Joyce, delighted. Brilliant. Great news. Genuinely, yeah. How much do you love Pádraig Joyce? And then he says, this is another brilliant Pádraig Joyce quote. I'm telling our lads since I came in, no back passing. So that's another they're not allowed to do. It's great. Now, according to Kieran Dealey's website, Galway are the worst culprits at giving to the goalkeeper and giving or a short kick out and giving it back. But, you know, stats can tell a lot of stuff.
Would you say they do it 70% of the time after last week?
Well, that was it. Like, what did they have it down at 30%?
26 or something like
but
that.
But I do think that at the same time, that's 26 of all.
Yeah.
Was it you that made that point to me or did someone else make that point on Twitter? That's 26% of all hand passing and kick passing. I'm talking about their directness from an attack.
Yeah, that was it.
You know, which I still stand by my 70. Yeah. Trust me on this show, lads. My stats are very, very rarely wrong because everyone will be too lazy to disprove it.
Pádraig Joyce has you wrapped around his little finger.
Oh, he does. For a bit of balance here, because because we love balance on this show. Absolutely don't. Niall Morgan, who is really annoyed about it, he says, for me, I don't understand why people who don't play the game get to make decisions on what players have to do. To me, goalkeeping has changed vastly in the last 10 or 12 years, with Cluxton coming along, then myself, Rory Beggan, Graham Brody, Sean Patton as well. We're all trying to make goalkeepers want to play. I thought that was a really nice line. We're all trying to make goalkeepers want to play. You know, because let's be honest, when we all grew up, nobody's putting their hand up to say, I want to be a goalie. Whereas now, potentially, it is a much more attractive position on the field to play in the way these lads play the goalkeeping game.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say about Niall Morgan's tweet there, like, I actually agree. I just thought the rule was unnecessary. Thought there's a lot of like interference from the Football Review Committee over the last few years, but this rule came through a club in Kildare.
Yeah,
you know, so it was brought through like that, and probably by players potentially.
No,
you know,
this was Stephen O'Mara that came up with this one, because remember Joe Brolly tried to claim it back then, and I was saying Brolly's actually claiming something, because I remember him replying to Stephen O'Mara's article saying well done, and then claimed it on his own.
Yeah, but Stephen O'Mara didn't get into Congress. I mean, like, how it was actually voted on and stuff.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is it's just not people who have never played the game thinks this is a good idea. Like, Brolly thinks a good idea, Stephen O'Mara thinks a good
idea.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, and it was a club. It wasn't like, as people sometimes think, the GAA committees are just a bunch of grey-haired people who are out of touch. This came through the proper democratic system, if you will, and then it was voted on. I still think we have enough rule changes. We have lots of tweaks, contrary to what some people think. Like, you know, I didn't think it was that necessary, but I'm not going to cry about it.
Yeah, well, look, to be honest, I don't think it'll change the game that much at all. It's just not going to. And listen, anyone that would say a goalkeeper should stay on his line and not come out, that's really old-fashioned. What I don't like is the idea that this is going to complete, that goalkeepers can't come out now because of this. They can play flamboyant football. They can get out and get involved, get up the field. They just can't take a return pass from a kick out because they want to reward the team that's pressing up on the six backs. For me, I don't.
Yeah, they can be the third pass. You know, if the receiver or the kick out gives the ball to somebody else, then the goalkeeper can come on to it.
Absolutely.
And like, the only time that Niall Morgan has come off the pitch in recent years hasn't been just as a result of a 1-2. Do you know?
No.
Like, he's got involved at other times. Now, I know that's probably the easiest and most direct route to get involved, but that's not the only way the goalkeepers can get involved. And like, what's evolved in recent years as well, through maybe not Morgan, but definitely Cluxton, definitely Graham Brody, definitely even there was a famous incident in a Mayo under-20 game when the keeper acted as an extra defender or a sweeper, and teams when they have to go ultra aggressive are doing that as well, where a goalkeeper might actually mark somebody forward. So it's like, I can maybe see where he's coming from in terms of, like, I know the rule wasn't rushed through, but there was nearly that kind of sentiment last week, especially like we're leading up to a Congress where the black card was the talk of the week about hurling, you know, so there was so much coverage of it, whereas the kind of, you know, the pack pass rule seemed to kind of just be called through on notice, and all of a sudden we're going to be doing it in a month's time as opposed to trial period and next year.
And we know that the kickouts, a lot of the time they can still go short because the press isn't possible all the time. The game's so disorganised, the goalie can be fast enough just to get it out, restarted through a cornerback. The only time this comes into play is when a press comes on. How many times can you get a good aggressive press? And then when you have a good aggressive press on, you have to have the opportunity to give it to the cornerback and to get it back. Where a lot of time when there's a good aggressive press, the right thing to do is drive it out. I'm not sure this will it's going to make a terrible amount of difference in the actual game. You know, I think it'll be a bit like the midfield mark. It'll just continue on without really being noticed, you know, and it won't discourage Niall Morgan. You would take a lot of rule changes to discourage Niall Morgan, Graham Brody and these lads not to come out with the goals. That's the Gaelic football they love.
Yeah, it's actually a rule in five-a-side, like, that you can't, if the keeper kicks it out, you can't give it back to him. You have to pass it to somebody else. Yeah, because otherwise, if you're winning, you could just keep giving it back to the keeper inside the area and the players couldn't tackle them. If you make a pass to an outfield player, then you can play it back.
Right. Well, there you go. Look, if it works in five-a-side, we're talking about elite level five-a-side here.
Yeah.
Acid test. Davy Fitzgerald, lads, I was going to ask Cheddar about this on the football show or on the hurling show, but I was talking, might as well throw it to you now because I think it is kind of interesting. And, you know, I was asking Davy about it last week when I was talking to him. And the big thing about Davy is that he doesn't give big rousing team talks anymore. And he says, in the dressing room, maybe 10 seconds, that's it. We have other things we do, but we'll keep that to ourselves. but there's other things we do I feel is more beneficial to what we do in the field. I don't believe anything you do on the day of a game will change the player too much. I believe that the week, the 10 days before it, is the window. This is for team talks. Now, like I said to Davey last week, Davey would get you, traditionally Davey would be well able to make one of these bang on the tables. We've seen it on YouTube. Mm. Like, I mean, loads of expletives thrown in, and that would get lads going. He doesn't do it. You know, like, I mean, the day of that rousing speech, I think at club level it might take a while to die out, but I think at intercounty level, Jim Gavin, absolutely. Could you imagine him raising his voice? I reckon they're more processed based. Davey Fitz has given it up. I think the day of the ability to rally your team up 10 minutes before the game, I don't know, is that needed for a championship match especially?
If Davey Fitz has given it up, then I think it might as well be obsolete. It's a very professional mindset. I mean, like, all these intercounty teams, they've all their work done in the couple of weeks beforehand. They've a more limited time frame in the league, but definitely in championship, it's not a case that they know their jobs, you know, well before, a couple of days before. They probably have a meeting the night before just to kind of run through them again. So as you said, the days of them kind of bashing the table and stuff is probably gone. And actually, like, you hear a lot of stories about that, it being player led now, especially at half time. I think this could have been a thing under Dublin where Jim Gavin would leave the players on their own for a couple of minutes, and this is more at half time to work out problems that had, you know, arisen during the first half. But yeah, it's something you would have heard kind of coming from professional sports, like, even like going back to the famous one with Paul O'Connell putting the fear of God into you. I doubt that happens in the Irish rugby dressing room now. I think that's gradually evolved into GAA. But like,
well, then Drico came and says, "We will be victorious." Well,
But I'd say there's still some scope for the, like, you know, we've talked about it before, when you notice that your team is a bit flat. Now, you'd like to think that, like, intercounty players have gone beyond that, but definitely at club level.
Yeah,
you know, like, I don't think it's gonna go at club level for a long time, because there will be those situations where managers will just see that their team is in need of something. It mightn't work because they might be flat anyway, regardless of what you say to them.
See, this is the thing, and this is what I think is interesting about Davey, that if the work is done in the 10 days leading up, the week, the Friday night before the game, the players should be arriving here, lads, tuned in. Like, what is said, I'm talking about championship. I do agree that in a league game, if they land and they're messing and stuff like that, you know, you could hop off them. But for championship, geez, I remember with manager, I don't think anything any manager's ever said in the dressing room made me change my attitude. But I do remember meetings on a Friday night that changed my attitude, that made me really tune in all day Saturday and land to that game with my gear perfect, and we're on a mission today. You know, that kind of, that needs to happen during the week. You need to be really tuned in all week for a big championship game. But can you not be tuned in, and then on the game suddenly, I think you waste energy shouting and roaring. I think you can be distracted by numerous team talks. The warm up, someone's talking. The dressing room, someone's talking. The huddle before the game, someone's talking. The same old shite, stay tight in your manner. You're wasting your energy. Like, you're tuned into that. You go through what everybody's job is. The motivation should speak for itself for championship. You know what I mean? I think the idea that you're constantly... I remember before Leinster final against Dublin, it was crazy stuff what was going on in the Laois dressing room. Like, Sean Dempsey, who's a great man, managed the Laois minors to minor All-Ireland, and he's managed for Ban last year, and he was with the Laois seniors manager. But his idea with these lads, he'd give you a puck or two. Like, I remember writing on this on Sports Show, and we're in a huddle, and he would have had Brendan Quigley and Michael John Tierney and all these lads at underage, and he's walking around in the tunnel and he's giving lads punches into the chest, and Brendan Quigley going and he's gone into another place.
Yeah.
And I'm just constantly thinking, like, I'm going along with the but I'm watching Dempsey like a hawk, and I says, if this lad hits me, I don't want to be hit. Yeah. I've been thinking about this game, can I step out of this huddle? I'm well up for this game. It's Dublin in a Leinster final in Croke Park. Did we need that? There was a table broken in the dressing room as we walked out, and it was real raw kind of... Now, we started the game brilliantly, so it's a bizarre kind of thing that what I was believing in, and I definitely think I expended energy by getting involved in this.
But that has a shelf. For how long was that effective for? Did you have a good 20 minutes?
We had a good 20 minutes.
Do you know what I mean?
But think how long, though, in between from that shouting and stuff. I always wondered as a Croke Park, especially like the big game. So you have this roaring shout and you break a table.
Yeah.
Then you come out and you're doing a parade. You're doing a few more kicking around. You're standing for a national anthem.
And then the worst thing is one more effort to get you up just in the huddle. It's like, Christ, what can be said here that's new? And it's a player that says it. And they all do it. And it's like, that's a bit of a waste of time. Do you know? Like, I don't know. It's definitely moved away. I can't see the day at inter-county level where they're banging on. Now, I reckon Banty McEnany might do it. You know, it depends, I suppose, on the manager.
I think there could be something to be said for it at half-time still. I think you're just, you're right. Like, your preparation should be right 10 days before, especially a couple of days before. And there's too long a gap between the changing room and the start of the match to have a direct effect. But at half time, you just come in, you've seen something, you're not happy with something.
Yeah.
You can probably tap into the emotional senses of players a bit more.
Well, the Joe Kernan's obvious one in the All-Ireland final in 2002 was he showed the medal. I doubt Joe was shouting and roaring then. I'd say he very, very calmly said, lads, this is what you're playing for. Mm. Do you want this medal like me, a runners-up one, or do you want to be winners? And a natural kind of roar would come after that and get out. Yeah. You know, it's nice to go out after a come on and get out the door. Yeah, you know, it puts an end to all the, it's almost like it puts a finality to half time. It's like you can't, let's not go out without, are we ready?
Yeah. Wonder does anyone do the Alex Ferguson thing? Lads, it's a leash. Get out there.
Who did he say that about? Spurs, wasn't
Tottenham,
it?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on from that. Oisín Mullin, some bad news for you, Conor. Mm. He's one of four players that's getting AFL trials during April. So they're going on a 2-week trial in Australia. And I think they go around to a few different clubs. This is another different one again. Like, we know there's the combine. So obviously from the combine... This results from the combine, and then you. I didn't know. I thought you were signed to a club from the combine. This is just heading around to a few different clubs and doing a trial with them.
Two players, I think, last year that did this tour. Is it four players that are going in total this year? But I think two players that went on this tour last year were signed up or stayed out. So, James Horne was asked directly about this in an interview last week, and all he said was that he was confident that Oisín Mullin would be around for championship. So he sounded like a man that is. If not resigned to losing Oisín Mullin, is resigned to the possibility that it might happen. Do you know, and I know at the combine, for what it's worth, he did the 20-metre sprint in 2.8 seconds, which would have been level with the best in Australia, I think, in 2019, and some agility test, which wasn't far off the best in Australia last year as well, which only confirms what we already knew about Oisín Mullin anyways, that he's really athletic, rangy, and obviously concerned, because like I went from thinking that there's a chance that Oisín Mullin might be involved in some capacity this year, to after the few league games thinking that he's a guaranteed starter this year, and apparently did very well on David Clifford. And I suppose the worrying thing for Mayo is that like the old guard are getting on, and there's not a raft of young players kind of coming in to replace them, and Oisín Mullin was maybe the poster boy for the next batch of Mayo players coming up. So there is a possibility that come this time next year he could be gone. So selfishly I don't want him to, but like I'm not going to begrudge him, you know, the prospect of making a career in the AFL either.
To be honest, it's always the same thing. You don't begrudge them, but like, I mean, it is a... You think James might... Well, I suppose it's too late, I suppose, for him to get signed up now. If he's doing a trial in April, it wouldn't be for this year. So maybe James is like, we'll definitely have him this year if he's not ruling that out, but there's a chance he could be gone the following year. Maybe,
I think so, I just wonder, is there any company in Tyrone that's willing to give him a job?
It is funny. Yeah. Like I started.
Maybe Tim O'Leary will give him a job in his hedge fund company or something. He could be a seller.
I started looking through the names.
Sell high. I know what to do.
All I'm doing is looking at the counties, you see, and when I don't see Derry, I'm like, grand, it's fine.
Yeah.
You're just shitting yourself that you're going to lose a player, so everyone becomes
selfish. There's two for Mayo, Frank Irwin as well.
Is he good? I was reading about him. He was a star of the minors.
All I saw was the couple of performances in the under-17 last year. He's good pedigree. He's the son of Gabriel Irwin, who was the Mayo keeper for years. Midfield half forward direction, really athletic, really rangy, still doing his leaving cert. So all I can go on is what I saw for the Mayo under-17s last year. He was really good. It could be not only one, but it could be a double hammer blow for Mayo if that happens.
Yeah, exactly. The other big hitters, two big games obviously this weekend. We're going to talk to Ryan McCluskey in very soon about Fermanagh and Armagh, and maybe we'll have a little bit of a chat when I finish talking to him. The other big game this weekend is Laois Dublin in the Leinster final. So Laois have done brilliantly to get back into another Leinster under 20 final again this year. Of course, to meet Dublin, who, you know, have been on another level to the other teams in Leinster, last year anyways, and they were beaten in the final and they're back again this year. But Ronan Coffey is the Laois captain. He's from Port Arlington. He did an interview in Laois today. I thought it was interesting in that it was a little bit funny, just the mindset that they had, especially last year. He says, this year we're a little bit wiser as nine of us played in the final, while I think just one of the current Dublin team was involved. We came in last year and we had won every game. I didn't think we were going to hammer them, but we thought we were going to beat them. Like they ended up losing by 13 points. And like he's trying to say, like, now we didn't think we were going to hammer them last year, but we all thought we were going to beat them. But they have nine left from last year's team, which is, you know, like, I mean, it's a huge turnover, and they were a very young team last year. So we give them a good chance, and Dublin have had a much bigger turnover. I'm not sure if he's right that they've only one left. Kieran Archer, obviously, unfortunately, from Leash, is still on the go for Dublin. He scored 3-8 in last year's final, 2-1 from play, and he's still going strong. So if he's the only one that's turned over, that's bad luck. That's bad luck from a Leash point of view.
Like, Dublin have a few players who would have been involved in the squad, obviously, last year. And, like, Evan Caulfield, the midfielder, got 3 points in the semi-final. Like, he's just free-scoring from there, and he would have been involved in the squad. The two half-forwards would have been involved. They came on in the Leinster final last year against Leash. So they have a bit of experience there. And part of me as well also just thinks, like, it doesn't matter. Dublin have just done it right. They've got the oldest players, each age group. And now it's, like, a whole new team that Leash are playing.
Yeah, well, could Dublin have the numbers to be able to do that? Yeah. Leash don't. And, like, I mean, you can't say to a Leash player, OK, you've next year, you're good enough, but we're just going, you know, Dublin have enough good lads under last year or whatever. But still, usually you have, especially at under 20. I played 3 years at under 20. Like, Beano played five. Like, it's crazy.
He played 5 years at under 20?
He would have, yeah. He would have played five, yeah. You would have
under 21s
Chris Conway with under 21s back then. Yeah, if you were playing under 21 when you were still minor, you would have been playing five. You have three after it. I'm fairly sure Beano played five. And then another interesting stat is that Eddie Kinsella is the Leash under 20 manager. Eddie Kinsella refereed the 2014 All-Ireland final. Who is it between? Quick, I'm throwing it at you. One, two, three, four.
I didn't know what you were pointing out.
I actually missed a year.
Will you listen? You don't even know who played in the 14-hour final, Conall Hewson.
Kerry Donegal.
Okay, so he's refereeing that final. He's obviously was an intercounty referee for a long time, but he was manager of Cortwood, who won the intermediate championship in Leash 2 years ago and stayed up at senior last year. So interesting, isn't it, that a referee has gone from refereeing, an intercounty referee has gone from refereeing to coaching. I'd like to send him back refereeing now, armed with all the coaching expertise and stuff that he has.
Did he have he had to retire? Did he have two cruciates? Did I read that?
I'm not sure.
No, it's just because I was just reading, because when you mentioned Eddie Kinsella earlier on, I was just he did an interview with GA.ie. And I don't think he mentioned it, but like positively for you, Willie, for Leash fans, there was talk of like this current Leash generation being reminiscent of the golden generation, let's say, of the 90s. So harking back from when you won minors and stuff like that. So
we were hammering Dublin in Leinster finals. Yeah. Two Leinster medals I have underage level, we hammered Dublin after replays in both of them in Tullamore.
They haven't, the lowest margin of victory for them in the under 20 so far was 9 points, I think, in the Leinster for Dublin this year.
Leash have some good players on their team. The fact they've nine underage again, like, I mean, I think they'll definitely get closer than the 13 last time. I think it's in Dr. Cullen Park as well, which, well, I don't know who it'll suit. But anyways, that's it. So best of luck to Leash under 20s. We'll come back with
from Willie
from everyone at the GAA.
A couple of scary.
Who was in the 2016 All-Ireland final?
Mayo. No, it wasn't even Mayo.
It was Mayo
in Dublin. Alright, we'll come back in part two.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you Free State bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
All right, so there's only one game this weekend, and it's Fermanagh taking on Armagh, and former Fermanagh great Ryan McCluskey joins us on the line now. Ryan, how's it going?
Not too bad at all. How are you?
Good, good. How's retirement? You were 19 years on the go for Fermanagh, so, like, I mean, I suppose this takes a bit, that took a bit of adjustment for you.
I actually seen, it was Mike Tyson, the great Mike Tyson's little video there. Sorry, it's up online at the moment of him kind of talking about his past, and And I, there were shades of me actually that could relate to that. You know, I probably found it very difficult. You probably would say the same yourself. You know, it was very regimented, obviously, for a number of years.
Yeah.
And that's something, listen, that I personally like. But you know, when you come into your latter years and you can't do the things that you've done, and maybe put the tackles in, you know, against the likes of yourself, and maybe be an enforcer, maybe at times, or think you were maybe a bit of an enforcer. You know, when you can't do any of that. And your body's just not the same as what it was. It was tough, but you know, I didn't sit around too long. I moved into management, I suppose, and moved into business then. So I suppose that's plenty for any man as well to keep them occupied. So I suppose that's filled the gap. But you missed the playing side of things, and you know, would take it all back in the morning. There was nothing like being out there, and I'm sure you'll agree with that.
Yeah, no, definitely. So you've opened up your own business. It's called Focus, and what is it? It's a sports recovery centre.
Yeah, well, we started off, I suppose it was two years ago, actually I think to today as well, that we started off as a small recovery unit, and then I was fortunate to get my local Gaelic club, obviously in Enniskillen Gaels, to get them to help. So we attached the gym side of things onto the recovery unit.
Right.
And then we found a bigger premises there, and we moved in there. So it's been a busy couple of years, but I'm delighted now with where things have gone, and I managed to hook one of my friends in as well, Cahill Beacom. He's came on board, so the two of us are plowing away despite all the Brexit problems. We're still alive and well at this stage, so things are going all right.
And do you go to Ricey then, and do you try to sell it to Ricey and say, look, this is what you need, who are you with now, and whatever, and get the Fermanagh lads in there?
Listen, we I suppose seen a gap in the market at the start in terms of you know, being a quite rural kind of part of you could say the country as well, and Fermanagh here, you know, we would have had to do a lot of travelling to different parts of the country to use some of these services, so that was the reason why we got them. But yeah, we'd be on Ricey's case, and you know, the Fermanagh County Board, and to be fair, they've been very, very good. And when I say the County Board, listen, we've been grateful of the support of many clubs and sporting and persons, I suppose, in the area that come in and use our services, and that's what we were trying to bring. You know, somewhere along the lines, we'd love it to be a kind of centre of excellence, and have, you know, maybe even a doctor at some stage in as well, or a sports specialist in that field. You know, but we're slowly building, and we're happy with things and where they're going.
Yeah, very good. Well, look, Camira, I want to talk to you about Fermanagh, because we haven't spoken about them too much on the show. They're kind of flying under the radar so far in the league. Like, it's a weird one. They probably should have beaten Kildare, a lot of people are saying. They beat Roscommon in a game that could have gone either way. They did 12 wides against Cavan to Cavan's 3 and missed a load of goal chances, so should have beaten them. And, you know, had a poor enough performance, by all accounts, against Westmeath. So where do you think they're at?
Yeah. I think you've hit the nail on the head, you know, and any games that I have been in attendance of, and obviously then done my homework on the other games, I think that inconsistency that you're only after kind of highlighting as well, that's probably been the most consistent part of their campaign so far. You know, creating chances in most of the games, and just not capitalising as well, has been a big kind of problem with the side thus far this year as well, in terms of coming under the radar as well. Listen, there's been a number of changes to the playing squad throughout the last season or so as well, and that probably has caused that bit of inconsistency. But you know, I suppose maybe this extra week will give the lads a chance to get back to the drawing board and try and right the wrongs from that Cavan game where they were hit by two cruel goals, two high balls in. Probably if anyone's seen the Patton goal in the Dublin game, you know, they weren't too dissimilar to that. So,
right.
So two high balls in, you know, were pivotal and swung that game. But again, you know, for me, Fermanagh with a better side that night and created more chances. I think they kicked 13, 14 wides, and you alluded to it at the start as well, Colm, that it has been the same in the rest of the games as well. Take out probably the Westmeath game.
Right, okay. And like, I mean, apparently there's a new style in Fermanagh. Has this been overplayed? Like, Shane McGullion was talking during the week, and he was saying that a lot of us haven't played that way with Fermanagh over the last while, so mistakes are going to happen. That's just the reality. But the more we play it, the more we practice, the mistakes will get ironed out, and hopefully we'll do the basics better. Armagh will probably be thinking we'll drop everyone back like we usually did, but if we push out and put pressure on them, hopefully we'll get the turnovers higher up the field. Has that been a feature? Is like, are mistakes being made because it's a new style and they're not used to it?
I suppose, listen, there's probably an argument for a number of points there with Shane, and I know he really only came into the squad this year, so I don't know where his previous thought process, maybe that was with the club. And listen, you know, he is a good lad and has done very well this year as well, and probably has been one of the key finds actually for the squad this year. He has been fantastic for Derek Onley, but in terms of that kind of style and system, you know, for me, and listen, I would know a lot of those lads very well. I'm only out of that change room a couple of years as well. There hasn't been a massive change, you know, despite, you know, we're very critical in Fermanagh here at times when things are going well. You know, obviously a lot of people will jump on the bandwagon and be, I suppose, handshaking and backslapping, and obviously then when things take a small turn for the worst, you know, we're very quick to jump on the horse and point fingers and criticise. You know, Rory and his backroom team, and Ricey was in that and key to it as well. You know, created I suppose a bit of a platform in terms of, you know, getting back to that level of maybe consistency and professionalism that I know it's that dreaded word maybe that people don't like to hear it within GAA circles, but you know, for a couple of years I know we'd done all right as well under Pete McGrath, but things had fallen a wee bit, you know, by the wayside, and standards I suppose had slipped. So when the boys come back in, they you know, I suppose worked on a style of play and tried to build, I suppose, from the back up. And I know there's a lot of criticism at the time and in terms of how we were playing, and yes, I completely understand that it wasn't maybe the pleasing on the eye to anyone coming in, you know, to watch the games. But I suppose, listen, you know, we had certain tools and we had to use them to the best of our ability as well. And I think what they've done is built on that as well. Yes, they've created more chances and they have been a bit more open in their play. But you know, they still, you know, have tried to defend and defend, you know, as much as they can and shut teams down and try and kind of counter-attack, and it has been good in the sense that they have created, you know, a number of scoring opportunities and they should have capitalised on those, but you know, the gaps at the back have cost them as well, you know, and it's about, I suppose, fine-tuning that. There is a lot of new faces and Shane is one of them, and it's just kind of bleeding those lads, getting them in, and he was right in saying, you know, getting them used to the system. They're going to make a lot of mistakes, but you know they need to learn, and they need to learn fast because you know, at this stage, from promotion, you know, contenders and thinking, you know, they might have a sniff at the start of the year, they're now looking at relegation, and obviously this game against Armagh this weekend is massive.
Yeah, no, exactly. So like, I mean, I suppose the difference between the Rory Gallagher era maybe with Ricey this year is that maybe they're not turning around and running back waiting, you know, they're maybe pressing a little bit up, and they're sometimes a bit like Dublin or Kerry or any of the big teams. If you're slow with your build up, they'll have lads back, but that's not where, you know, they're not heading back waiting like they used to.
Well, I suppose, listen, I kind of have certain insights, and obviously, I'm not going to give anyone from Armagh here any insight into where they're at. But no, listen, they seem to, have maybe certain episodes or patterns in their play where they will, try and close the opposition down, maybe there's not as many getting back, but certainly, yeah, they do try and kind of keep it as compact as they can, certainly down the middle, and try and close up the opposition in that sense. And really, as we said, you know, it has just been that lack of firepower up front that has been critical and has cost them, you know, dearly. And you know, if you look at it's so nearly, I suppose, a case this year in terms of they've nearly beaten these sides, and they've you know, nearly kind of pushed on in these games. And I can only look back to last year, you know, they nearly got out of actually Division 2 and went up to 1. You know, yeah. I think a point would have secured them in Armagh that night, on you know, against Armagh, and a point against Meath would have possibly even done it, depending on the results the last day. But you know, Division 2 is just warfare this year, and as much as we're now sitting and we're looking at this game of the weekend with Fermanagh where they are and obviously Armagh where they are, the whole thing could swing. And you know, Fermanagh beat Roscommon a few weeks ago, you know, there would be nothing that would surprise me more that in you know, 2-3 weekends time when the league campaign is at its conclusion, that Fermanagh, you know, could be sitting there thereabouts at the top, and Roscommon could be near the bottom. So the league has just been madness in Division 2, and if there is a headline for Division 2, it would be that inconsistency for everyone, because everyone can beat anybody on their given day, and you know, it's probably the same with Armagh, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's the most evenly matched division from top to bottom. There's no, you know, like, yeah. Fermanagh versus Armagh, you're wondering like who could win this one, and that's top versus bottom almost, you know, like, I mean, yeah, so it is, yeah, the closest, yeah. In Division 1 there's a gap between the top and the bottom, Division 3 there's, yeah, a gap between the top and bottom, there's not that in 2. Ryan Jones, who's been talking about a new role, he said, Ricey has played me in a couple of different positions and I feel one of my responsibilities is to get scores on the board as much as possible. Are we seeing, I think he scored 6 points in the first 3 games, are we seeing him get forward more and, you know, given more of a role, not to have to defend as much?
I would say I would listen with Ryan, and he has been one of the better players for Fermanagh, certainly this season, and he has contributed, you know, from a scoring perspective a bit more this year. He has been one of the dominant figures, I would have said, over the last number of years, you know, and even with his club, listen, he's been at the forefront of their campaigns in Fermanagh and obviously Ulster, and been one of the key figures over the last number of years. You know, him adding to that game has certainly, you know, pushed him on to another level. And listen, he will need it at the weekend as well, you know, and it'd be brilliant, listen, if himself and I know Connell, listen, and Garvin, there's 3 Jones brothers in there. If the 3 lads can just recapture that form they've had with Derek Onley and, you know, come to the fore at the weekend, because, you know, when one's playing well usually as well, you know, they're all kind of, you know, adding their 2 pence as well, so it'd be brilliant, listen, if he could add more scores at the weekend and obviously try and get that massive win for Fermanagh.
Right. One thing I wanted to ask you about was the Rory. You obviously played under Rory Gallagher, and you were there when, you know, the pretty defensive system, and you got to the Ulster final. And like, Rory Gallagher was always the one to say, look, this is the system that suits the players we have. And like, I used to make the point on the show, is it really though? Like, I mean, is that kind of putting Fermanagh into a Division 4 kind of category when they have very good footballers? And if you had the 2 Quigleys and, you know, Tomás Corrigan, for example, you'd be well able to play a different style of football. How did that sit with you by saying this is the only way that these lads are able to, you know, play? Or would that have ever even crossed your mind? You were doing well with the system, it didn't bother you?
I think, listen, you know, we under Rory, yes, Rory came in and knew we were shipping far too many scores. If you go back to that Pete McGrath era, as much as we were maybe scoring and it was looking maybe pleasing on one side of the fence, you know, when you looked at it defensively, we were shipping far too many scores, and you know, that had caused a relegation, I suppose, as well, you know, under Pete, possibly even 2, I'm not sure, in that campaign with when Pete McGrath was in. But you know, we were very inconsistent from a defensive point of view, in that sense. So I know he came in and that was one of the first things he was looking to address. In terms of then the firepower, yes, we certainly had players with firepower as well. You know, I suppose you could say then that At times we were hit with maybe some injuries as well, which didn't help. And he certainly listened. You know, I suppose people will have their own opinions on the whole thing. He has taught, I know, myself and that current group of players a lot in terms of football knowledge and seeing the game from a different side of things. He was an integral part, obviously, to that Donegal side. And however people may have liked or not liked their style of play, you know, it was very successful for them as well. He does a bit of work, I know, I know he's with Derry. I know he does a bit of work, I think, in Killybegs possibly as well. And I think he has a massive amount of attacking talent down there, and they play a completely different style. So, you know, listen, you know, Rory came in and him and the backroom team felt that defensively we could be stronger and build from there. And, you know, I know we didn't win too many games by 10, 15, 16 points, but from a player's point of view, listen, the players were happy, you know, to get to the Ulster final that day, although, you know, we didn't give a good account of ourselves, you know, to get there and to have that promotion campaign and possibly even get up. You know, the players were happy and it brought us on to the next level, and you know, it definitely stabilised, you know, where we were as a county. And people say about, you know, us punching above our weight, and stuff like that. And that used to, I suppose, irritate us in the fact that we trained as hard as anybody else. We were out working as hard as everybody else, and we were putting in the same, you know, shifts and hours and commitments as everybody else. And I suppose the way we've seen it, you know, like anything else, you know, why couldn't we be those Sheffield Uniteds or Bournemouths, or Everton's maybe in your case here, you know, where we could, maybe upset the top echelon of teams, you know, within the GAA or, you know, I was talking about soccer terms there, but, you know, we might not be winning well, or you're Atletico Madrid, we were maybe winning it ugly, but ultimately we were getting an extended summer and we had some brilliant days. So, you know, ultimately, you go back to, if you want to play well and get knocked out every week in the first or second week, and it wasn't the case. And, you know, you could ask those players who you referred to as well, and those lads all bought into it, and you know it obviously brought us all on. It wasn't too pleasing to watch, but listen, it was successful to where we wanted to go, and has created that platform now for Fermanagh to push on as well.
Yeah, it probably extended your career by a few years as well, because you didn't have you had plenty of lads back to help you, because when I was playing, you used to be Fermanagh's man marker, and then you kind of you were more or less one of the zonal players organising the defence a little bit. And I remember marking you. It was never an easy experience marking you. And then, of course, I went to Boston one year and I was kicking around before the game, and I look up the other end of the field and who's up signed up for the McInnesbys? You. I went, oh, for fuck's sake. And then I couldn't believe my luck. You went over and marked Dennis Glennon. It was brilliant.
Aye, listen, it was good times now, but it just shows you how the game has completely, you know, changed and transformed. And you're right, I think, listen, in my latter years, the role had became more of a maybe organisational role, and in terms of, you know, there wouldn't have been that I called it that kamikaze marking, and I would refer to this, I do the coaching down to the lads in Burr, and I always go back to, you know, the days, I'm not 90 by the way either, but I always go back to those days when, you know, you refer to Lexi yourself or the Glennons, or it could have been Canavans, or God knows who it was, where it was just a big open bit of green grass, and yeah, you had maybe yourself and yourself, Colm, or myself and Stephen McDonald, and you're just sitting praying for somebody to come back and be in front of you and close things down and trying to help you out, because you were usually up against a greyhound and you're sitting going, right, I need to be Mike Tyson here, you know, and I need to try and enforce my presence on them and try and kind of shut them down physically or in some way. But now, listen, the game has changed, and evolved so much over the years. And I suppose, yeah, it was trying to reinvent myself over the last number of years and trying to kind of play as long as I could. And obviously then, you know, I was grateful, listen, any time I put on that green jersey of whatever management team was in there, and hopefully give it my best. But I think, yeah, the system now probably suited me more. And if you ask any defender, I think it suits any defender these days, you know. But gone are those days of the 1v1s, you know.
Yeah. So when you're coaching players now, do you coach them in the same way you would have been coached, because those one-on-ones aren't really there? Do you just always tell them to stay goal side, someone will come and help you, you know, rather than try and get out in front, for example, which is more high risk?
No, it's a good question. I suppose there is a balance. There would have to be a balance of both. You know, defenders have to be able, because at some stage in the game there is a likelihood and a high possibility that they will be left in maybe a one-on-one situation or a two-on-two, whatever it is, and they have to be accountable for their man. But, you know, there is certainly less scenarios of that in the modern game, so you are kind of trying to look at backing players up. And as I said, from a defender's point of view, and when I was standing beside yourself or Dennis Glennon, whoever it may have been, and you were sitting going, hoping and praying the ball didn't come in. You were just hoping that somebody would be back to maybe deal with that breaking ball. So a lot of the times, yeah, you're looking at scenarios like that in the modern game where, you know, you're looking at defenders maybe not looking for fetching clean ball to work on breaking balls, so that you have maybe players coming in and scooping that ball up and getting possession and kind of building from there. But, you know, that's, I suppose, moving with the modern game and trying to evolve with the modern kind of style of play as well.
Yeah, come here, before I let you go, do you think Fermanagh will be able to do it against Armagh? They're obviously, we all rave about Armagh's forward line, which is like as good as anyone in the country. Their midfield's very good. You could potentially get some joy off their defence, so I suppose that's the way you might be looking at it.
I've seen them a number of times, listened to them and played against them over the last number of seasons. We I don't know what the actual record is or the amount of times we played them, but I know it's over the last maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seasons. We definitely have played them 6, 7, possibly 8 times as well. We just seem to be on a collision course every year as well with them. But I don't know. They're quite inconsistent as well. They're still hard to work out.
Yeah.
You know, under Kieran as well, in terms of the last night I watched them, was against Kildare, and they were, you know, exceptional that night. I was actually thinking to myself that night that, and I went on record and saying that, you know, they have to be contenders for Division 2 and will probably cause a few upsets in Ulster this summer and maybe give it a rattle. But there's an impatient side to their game as well, where against Kildare probably suited them. The conditions the night, they couldn't, because of the environment around them, they couldn't kick the ball that night because it was all over the place. It was a really bad night for football. Mm-hmm. And it suits them actually carrying the ball. And on, you know, the rest of their league form, and any time then I've seen clips of them and highlights of them, they seem to have this impatient side of their game where they're looking to go through the transitions quite quickly through feet. And, you know yourself, this time of year, the environment as well and the conditions don't just lend well at times to that maybe one bounce in front of the forward, you know, ball that everyone would love.
Yeah.
It's just horrible conditions at the minute, and I think they're probably better running the ball, and it's that impatient kind of play at times where they're hurried and looking to get the ball in nice and quick to some brilliant forwards as well. I think that has been, you know, the impulsive and careless side for them that has cost them then, because
it's
teams can get at that back.
Yeah, it's a strength and a weakness nearly.
Yeah, it is. And then teams have kind of counter-attacked them and caught them on the break and caught them then defensively, you know, because of just maybe bad decision-making and those wee careless kind of phases in their play. But listen, they have all the tools and you know, obviously I'm putting my Fermanagh hat on as well. I think at home, you know, we're a force to be reckoned with, although I know Cavan breached us the last day, but I'm thoroughly hoping and expecting for a Fermanagh win on Saturday evening.
Brilliant stuff, Ryan. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem at all. Good man. Thank you.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Moore's here for both.
We body in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Kieran.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Meath at some stage for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Yeah, great stuff from Ryan there, lads. So it's hard, like, Ryan reckons the home advantage is going to swing it for Fermanagh. I wouldn't be surprised who wins this either way, because as we know, like I was saying to Ryan, there's just such a little gap from the very top to the very bottom in Division 2. It's the closest division right the way through, and Fermanagh might be in a bit of a false position based on the fact that they threw the Cavan game away and could have beaten Kildare. Do you know? So, like, I mean, things can change very, very quickly. The whole idea about the new Fermanagh, the new attacking Fermanagh, which Ryan is kind of playing down, I think maybe the truth is somewhere in between here, right? So, like, they're obviously not as defensive as they were under Rory Gallagher, but the idea that they're playing like Galway might be a little... But again, the way to play against Fermanagh, Ryan makes a very good point in the fact that sometimes Armagh get a bit impatient and they can be a bit loose with their kick-passing game.
Yeah.
And a couple of sweepers, tactically, makes sense against... One sweeper makes sense against Armagh, even if it's just your centre back covering back, cutting out that initial kick pass that they like.
Yeah, but I see Fermanagh, their highest score in game, they got 14 points and won 11 in the last game, you know. So,
yeah,
again, like, it was worse last year and the last 2 years, definitely. But they were undone against Cavan by two just high balls into the area. One of them, Faulkner, came up from fullback, no one picked him up. So, it's one of those cases when you have all those bodies back, you know, so, somebody doesn't pick up one person who's completely free. And I was just wondering, that was two goals in 5 minutes from high balls. Like, Armagh have better clientele to drop in around the square, better ball players if they kick the ball in. Would they be licking their lips thinking about that, even with all those bodies back? It could be a way through.
Yeah, but that was a one-off game. I wouldn't say Fermanagh have a clear weakness in their full back line for high ball. You know what I mean? I'm not sure Shea Cullen's a solid full back. Like, I don't think that's it. That's not an ongoing issue for them. Do you know? And I think if Armagh go down, Armagh play a different game than hopping it in onto the edge of the square. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's necessarily a weakness or what. I do think definitely that if you stop Armagh's kicking game, or if you maybe tempt them into it but have a covering player, you know, you can get a lot of turnovers with Armagh, because like, obviously we know kick passing is a lot higher risk than moving it through the hands.
Yeah, and I'll say they'll cut their cloth for Armagh this weekend to suit, because I'm just looking back at like when Armagh played, I think it was Westmeath last time out, and just the forward line they had, like Rory Grugan got 1-4, Rhian O'Neill, I think it was all from freeze, but Jarrell Tolk Burns, Connor Turbutt, who was shown really well earlier on. So I think with that in mind, as kind of Ryan hinted at,
and Jamie Clark came on and scored the equalising goal.
Jamie Clark came on and scored a goal as well. So like, as I think it was Jim McCarry was hinting at a couple of weeks ago, that like whatever talk is coming out about Fermanagh about a more expansive style, you know, it mightn't necessarily bear fruit against Armagh this weekend, which I think Ryan McCluskey was hinting at. Because,
but you have to be careful though, because if you head back and wait for them, you'll turn them off kicking altogether. Do you get me? And then it'll be one of these games of chess. And the better players will probably win out in that scenario.
Yeah.
You almost want to tempt Armagh into taking those risks for the kick passing. Do you get me? Because it is more high risk, and have your half-back line tempting them into it, but dropping off, you know what I mean? Dropping off, they're meant to cut it out.
Yeah, so with just one sweeper. Would have to be a very, very clever sweeper there, you know, just to kind of cover the ground properly. Because if he doesn't, then like Armagh have the forwards to kind of do damage against that. Like,
yeah, no, it is. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how they go about it. But like, you know, I suppose, you don't want Armagh not to kick pass too much, because that's, you will get cheap turnovers against Armagh just through their impatience with using the kick pass.
Yeah, it is a fine line, but like, if you sort of don't want them to kick pass either. You know what I mean? You don't want them to have that game.
And here's the thing that Armagh don't have that the likes of Galway have, is a consistent target man up front. Rhian O'Neill is brilliant, but he's not out in front all the time. Like, he's not going to give you that obvious ball that Shane Walsh will give you all the time. Jamie Clark doesn't play like that either. He's pure class. You know, I think when you're playing a kicking game, you need an Andy Moran or a Shane Walsh, or someone who's just constantly moving. And when you look up, that's on. Because when you look on up and it's not on, you have to go backwards or sideways, because you're under enough pressure. Like, many times have you come up, your butt kind of come up through the wing back position, and you're very tempted to say, will you come on?
Yeah.
And it's a real Weasley thing to do. But sometimes you can get frustrated because nothing's on. You want to see something easy.
And you turn back. Yeah.
And then you turn back, because, or else you give a 50-50 one, because I've often done it. And I know it's not the right ball, but it's like, either I give this now or I'm going to get caught. And you give it in, and it's a 50-50, and it's punched out and it comes back out.
Mayo are suffering for that so badly in this year's league, because not only Andy Moore and Jason Doherty isn't there as the link man on the 40, and because Aidan O'Shea has had to be played in midfield, there's no physicality up there as well. But Andy particularly, because Mayo have thrived in the last few years on those balls that Andy has been out in front and is winning all the time in good positions, as opposed to a few years earlier, he used to be winning them, you know, maybe on the 20-yard line, out on the sideline. And then he kind of mentioned how Tony McEntee had a word with him to stop going out there, and then he was winning them in better positions.
Yeah,
I get what you're saying about Rhian O'Neill as well. I just wonder, I see Jarlath Oak-Burns has he been kind of, they haven't seen too much of Armagh, has he been kind of going out the middle? They've been using him as a tactic for an advanced mark.
He's playing at midfield, pretty much. He came on against Laois in midfield anyways. That's the game I saw him in. I think he's playing in midfield, but he is an attacking midfielder. Yeah, he's getting on. But that's the thing. And the one thing about Andy Moran is, Stephen Rutchard's tenure with Mayo was going terribly until Andy Moran came on. He started against Kildare in a qualifier. They'd been beaten by Galway. Yeah. They hadn't been playing well in the league. Could have been relegated. And Andy Moran gave them that focal point. I do think if you want a kicking game, you have to have a focal point. And the brilliant thing about Galway changing Comer and Walsh is that Walsh, it's impossible to get out in front of Walsh. He's just so fast. And he's constantly there as that focal point. And without the focal point, what's your kicking game then? It has to be perfect. Do you know? You have to get it into the perfect position to give the perfect diagonal ball. Whereas Galway don't really have to do that. You know, Galway, Shane Walsh will often break out and collect it around the 40, take on his man or else throw it off, and now someone's broken the line past him. Do you know what I mean? I think that teams that want to play a kicking game need to find a suitable target man. It doesn't have to be a tall man. It needs to be a live wire.
And Galway haven't even played Ian Burke yet in this year's league as well. Just
who'll be constantly moving.
And
through,
then if not working for Shane Welsh, throw Damien Comer in there at 14 as a focal point. So
we're bringing it back to Galway again, lads, aren't we?
And excuse at all.
Okay, predictions here, and what do you think, Connor?
Fermanagh's need is greater. Just maybe because of that, I might tip them to just get over the line. As you said, they haven't been playing that badly, and their position in the league might be a little bit false. So I'll just go for them to get over the line.
We go Armagh. The only team they lost to is Laois. Sure, they always lose to Laois.
Weirdly, I'm going to go for a draw. I think it could be close, and I don't trust Armagh yet. I take your point. And Brewster Park is a terrible place to go, so I'll go for a draw. Completely sitting the fence. Right, that's it, lads. We'll be back. I'm not sure we'll do a show on Monday unless there's some sort of World War 3 happens in this, or maybe Laois win the under 20. We might do a might do a special.
Two shows.
We'll definitely be back next Thursday. We'll see about Monday. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, he gets such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we put him back in their houses for 10 years.